When Bogdanovich takes his big fall, the pride that goeth before the fall, what does Hollywood do? They actually smile about this. A lot of people, frankly, take pleasure in the fact that this guy, this young director who's so full of himself, took a big fall. And there's an absolutely terrific, incisive quote to this effect from Billy Wilder, who certainly knows the history of Hollywood, having made so much of it himself. Here's what Billy Wilder said. This is about the period in the mid to late 70s where Bogdanovich had one flop after another. And a lot of people just, again, in Hollywood kind of took pleasure in that. Here's what Billy Wilder says. It is not true that Hollywood is a bitter place, divided by hatred, greed, and jealousy. All it takes to bring the community together is a flop by Peter Bogdanovich.
Hello, and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor, director, Peter Bogdanovich, who just passed. Mike, I'm going to let you give everybody the background of this man.
Well, Marie, I have to say, I'm very sad in a lot of ways to have to do that. Sad in the sense that I once had dinner with Peter Bogdanovich and we had a wonderful conversation. I met him on a second occasion. I have great respect for him. A very mixed record as a director, but when he really hit. And what I want to emphasize more than anything is the multi-hyphenate quality here. We're going to talk about him primarily as a film director. That's what our program is all about. But also the fact, of course, he was an actor early in his career and late in his career. And that's also relevant for what we do on the program. But the thing I want to really talk about, I suppose, is something that is relevant to a program like ours, but not oftentimes emphasized. Namely, Peter Bogdanovich began his career as a film programmer. Well, he began as an actor, but then a film programmer and a film writer, and not just a film journalist, but I would say a film scholar. And this is the aspect of Bogdanovich that I really want to emphasize. So let me get to that, and then we can double back on the life and career otherwise. When I was talking with him over dinner, one of the things I asked him about was a generational question. He was so fortunate as to when he came along. In the 1950s, as a young actor, he was working in theater, both as a theater actor and theater director. His teacher was Stella Adler. She was one of the great method gurus, if you will, along with people like Lee Strasberg and Elia Kazan and so on. And Stella Adler was the teacher of Marlon Brando. And Brando always had great respect for Stella Adler. Well, you know what? Not too many years later, Bogdanovich was 82 when he recently passed, but he's like a generation younger than Brando, but still Stella Adler is his teacher. And when he's a teenager, he's very precocious. He's a teen actor in New York where he grows up. And gosh, he's got Stella Adler to teach him. So anyway, he's working in theater, both as an actor and then director. He segues in the early 1960s. This is what I really want to focus on. In the early 60s, he's working with the Museum of Modern Art in New York. He is programming retrospectives for directors like Alfred Hitchcock and Howard Hawks and so on. Bear in mind, this was a time when these directors were not widely, they were known to the public. Certainly Hitchcock was extremely famous, but there hadn't really been serious scholarly attention paid. It was first paid in France. It was the new wave writers turned directors like Godard and Truffaut and so on, their auteur theory, where as part of this, they said, look, you have a great film director like Alfred Hitchcock, and whatever assignment he's working on, whatever story he's working on, there's the signature, as they called it, the écriture. There's this the mark of the director there, even in a routine studio assignment. They started promoting the idea. American film critics like Andrew Saris, right around 1960, picked up on that. Bogdanovich arrived at the perfect moment. And he and I talked about this. He said, you know, you're just sometimes blessed that way. He said, as he came into his own as an actor and writer and director, it's the late 50s, early 60s. Bam, he's there at the perfect moment for this, because what Bogdanovich does is he puts together the first retrospective devoted to Alfred Hitchcock in 1962, I think it was. So in around 1961, 62, 63, he's doing retrospectives for people like Hitchcock and Howard Hawks and Raoul Walsh and on, John Ford, on and on. And he's writing the monographs, the books to go along with that. Bear in mind, again, this was a time when, although the public would have known a few of these directors, certainly Hitchcock by name, they hadn't been given serious, quote unquote, scholarly treatment. And even, this is really telling, and it's always a shocking fact to consider, that Alfred Hitchcock, in his very long and distinguished career, never won a competitive Academy Award as director. And we could spend hours just talking about that, but think about that. He was considered a great entertainer. But whereas John Ford won 4 Academy Awards as Best Director, but somehow Hitchcock, the great entertainer. Bogdanovich was as crucial as anybody in starting to change that perception. So from doing that work in New York in the early 60s, he got to know those directors. And this is the one area where I envied him so much. And I shared my sense of envy with him. I said, my gosh, to be in your generation where as you're entering the movie industry in whatever way, as a film journalist and then eventually director and so on, a lot of the great old directors were not only still alive, some of them were still working, and he sought them out. And so where I give Bogdanovich so much credit, even more than as a film director, is as a film journalist and film scholar. Bogdanovich wrote around 12 books, and I mean, I've read most of what he's written. One of the books, for instance, which I highly recommend, is called Who the Devil Made It. Came out in 1997. It's more than 800 pages long. It compiles, it puts together interviews that Bogdanovich did over the years with, yes, Alfred Hitchcock and Howard Hawks and Raoul Walsh and on, just a panoply of great directors. And that's the generation of Hollywood directors that I'm absolutely fascinated by. Imagine if you're born in the 1890s or at the turn of the 20th century. When you enter the film industry, it's in its infancy too. You know, like John Ford, it's the mid to late 19 teens. You're entering Hollywood. You're making Hollywood Hollywood as much as anyone, right? And you have a long career. You're still working into the 1950s and 60s and even 70s. Those are the directors that Bogdanovich loved to sit down and talk with. And when I say talk with them, these are extended interviews. He really got to know them. He became, you know, very friendly with Hitchcock, and they would talk on many occasions. Orson Welles, you know, not only that he had written a book about Welles and also partly wrote Welles' autobiography, but the fact that, you know, Orson Welles, when he was sort of on the skids financially, which he was for decades, in the late 60s, actually lived in Peter Bogdanovich's house. Imagine that, if you have Orson Welles as your tenant, living rent-free, I assume. But this is the amazing thing about Bogdanovich that way. So when I think about him, I think so much about him as a great director. And I'll very quickly say, I think his 1971 film, The Last Picture Show, is one of the great films. It's one of my personal favorites. For many years, we used it in our American cinema course, and I have seen it, I'm not bragging, but just stating, I've seen it more than 100 times at this point, partly because I was teaching it, but it's a film that I know and love so much, you know, and we'll talk more about it as we go along, but I wanted to set the stage with that so that as we talk about him as a film director with a very mixed, as I say, track record, bear in mind that I think his place in American film history is really important because he helped to celebrate so many of the great directors we now just kind of take for granted in a healthy sense. Yeah, Hitchcock's a great director. You know, films made about him and books about him and so on. Well, Bogdanovich had a lot to do with pushing that process forward.
You know, you have hit on so many things that I wanted to make sure we highlighted. So I'll jump in starting with thank you for mentioning Who the Devil Made It, because I just finished reading that to look for background information about this episode. And he said this about Stella Adler. He said, I entered this amazing and beautiful woman's studio when I was 16, having lied by 2 years. And she became, over the years until she died in 1992, my second mother, outliving my mother by more than a decade. Though she never directed a movie, she did act in a few unworthy of her. Stella taught acting in such an inclusive way that she also was teaching directing, not only because it's extremely difficult to be a good director if you do not know or share in the actor's problems, but also because Stella taught a theater of heightened reality, seemingly against the very naturalism that movie acting generally encourages, but in keeping with the mythic proportions natural to the theatrical film medium. I wondered if that's how he went so seamlessly between acting and directing, because for him, they were kind of the same skill. Now, I agree with you completely that when I think of Peter Bogdanovich, I think of him as a film historian and scholar, especially all the things that he had to say about Hitchcock. If you buy enough Hitchcock DVDs and there's any extra stuff on there, oftentimes it's Peter Bogdanovich, you know, with a quip or an imitation of Hitchcock or some backstory. And it's always funny. It's always interesting and illuminating. He's got a great way of, he's a great impressionist. I also wanted to mention that you never see him without these huge glasses and the bandana. These are his, you know, trademarks. And in fact, we had privately, you and I had talked about when we watched House of Gucci, that Adam Driver's character is like, he's got those Peter Bogdanovich glasses. You just can't like associate that with anybody except for him, which I think was smart to land on two very recognizable aspects of him. But I think he really was, more than anybody else I can think of in American movies, the guy who kind of took cahier de cinema, the criticism of movies that the French started, and kind of took it, you know, did the same here in the United States. And, you know, for that, I think that's really how I came to know more about him. I had seen several of his movies without knowing he had anything to do with them. Mask, for example, and Noises Off, which is one of my favorite films of all time. If I ever am feeling down and I need something that is guaranteed to make me laugh, that's the movie that I put on, not realizing that it was Peter Bogdanovich, but it doesn't surprise me either. It's got, you know, the same actors that he likes to use over and over, like John Ritter. So it wasn't surprising at all to find out that he actually is behind lots of things that went on in Hollywood.
When you mentioned those glasses, one thing I always remember is we're sitting at the dinner table and I realized my glasses were looking right into his glasses. And I sort of fixated on that, like, because those glasses were such a trademark for him, those and the sort of the ascot, the scarf, whatever, he would always be wearing that. And the reason I want to share that further is for many of our audience members, you know, hopefully you know some of his films or we'll get to know them, but the image of Bogdanovich, to some extent, the way you get to know him is something Marie mentioned. You're watching some other movie, just fill in the blank. You're watching some other movie, let's say on a DVD where it's got the extras, right? And you go to the extras, how often the commentary, the feature-length commentaries by Peter Bogdanovich, or, you know, when they have various mini featurettes and all those things get tied in for DVD extras. Marie, think about all the times you and I have been watching DVDs where guess who pops up on the extras? It's Peter Bogdanovich there, and it's always welcome because he has great anecdotes. And the other thing I want to pick up on that you mentioned is he was always a great mimic. And I noticed that, like, talking with him, and you'll notice it on DVD extras too, if he's talking about Hitchcock, before you know it, he's talking like Hitchcock. And he could do the impressions of Hitchcock and Howard Hawks and Raoul Walsh and John Ford and all those guys. That's, again, where I say multi-hyphenate, but ultimately take out the hyphens because these things kind of merge or meld into each other, that he was an actor, then became in theater, became a theater director, became a writer about film, then became, you know, a film maker and also a film actor. And, you know, after a while, all that kind of merges, doesn't it? So that when you get Bogdanovich later in his career, it's not at all surprising that this guy would pop up as one of the main secondary characters, to put it that way, on The Sopranos, right? You know, you realize he's always been an actor. And I know when I sat and talk with him, it's just like in the middle of an anecdote, he just slips into that character. He's telling me about Orson Welles, and then he's talking like Orson Welles. And it's a spot-on imitation. It's not some facile, glib thing. It's like he knows the personality. He knows the cadences. Think about that. I mean, it's a performance art, if anything. But think about how that guides or helps somebody as a film director. You're working with your actors. You want them to get them into character, and you're thinking about presentation. Not just the words, but how would you say the words? And Bogdanovich always, because of that mimicry, was able to, like, immediately take you to that story. What a blessing it would be to be, like, on the set where you have a director who could do that with you as an actor, working with you that way. And you're right, Marie, he oftentimes worked with some of the same actors. They were simpatico that way. So at this point, let me throw it back to you, but maybe we can start to talk about the development of the career. Since we said we'd mostly talk about as a film director, we should do that, I think. So let me hand it back to you for his origins, if you will, as he segues from being a film journalist, which he never gives up, really. He's always doing some of that in his career. But at that point in the late 1960s where he's becoming a film director.
And I think he was a better film director than he was an actor, although I don't think he was a bad actor. I just don't think he thrived the way he did when he was behind the camera. And that might have to do with the people that he had in front of the camera and enjoying directing them. But we're going to have to talk about The Last Picture Show, because I think that's what put him on the map. And I think that was almost too bad that it was so successful, because it's hard to top a movie like that. So let's talk about that movie in terms of how important it is to American cinema. I know that you used it, like you said, for a long time in the classroom. First of all, how well did it play in the classroom? What did people think? And why is this movie so important to his career and to American movies?
Do we have 3 hours?
Mike. I know you know all about this subject.
but Marie, leading up to that, very briefly, in the late 60s, he started to work with Roger Corman. A lot of members of his generation, think about Martin Scorsese, think about directors like that who all made movies for Roger Corman, because these were low budget B pictures. And Scorsese has a great quote where he says, you know, the great thing he said about working with Roger Corman was, if you kept to your budget and you kept to the schedule and you didn't get too crazy, you could pretty much do what you wanted. You'd deliver the film to him and you learned on the job, right? And so the film that actually Peter Bogdanovich's first film was made for Roger Corman, is called Targets. It came out in 1968. It's about a mass shooter, you know, it's inspired by a real life case, but it got a lot of attention in critical circles. I mean, you know, commercially it was so, but people noticed it, you know, the right people, as they say, noticed it. And it also had a late career performance by Boris Karloff, very good. And so Bogdanovich loves to get the film history into his films. That leads up to the miracle year for me of 1971 in terms of Bogdanovich's career. He directs a documentary called Directed by John Ford in 1971, a really good feature-length documentary about John Ford. So always, he's on parallel tracks here as a filmmaker himself and as that film scholar, as I call it, you know, making films about earlier and very great directors. For The Last Picture Show, he in 1971, you know, this is his big critical and commercial hit that year. It is just a spectacular film based on a Larry McMurtry novel set in Texas in the early 1950s, very much an insular, let's say claustrophobic, small Texas town, and all of the melodramas playing out there. The thing is, not only is this film set in the early 1950s, it looks like it was made then. It really has qualities of that. So everything about the framing, everything about the use of music in it, you know, whether it's Hank Williams or any of the other country music performers of that era and some early rock and roll type music. But the most spectacular aspect of it is the acting. It's one of the all-time great Hollywood films in terms of an ensemble cast. And, you know, we could go through all the actors in it, but let me just very quickly highlight the two of them who won Academy Awards. Ben Johnson and Cloris Leachman, each won Academy Awards as Best Supporting Actors. And those performances were like, you know, usually I try to be like a cool customer, even like a little cynical, this and that. I got to tell you, I'm just gushing when I talk about those performances. You know, Ben Johnson plays Sam the Lion, who's sort of like the unofficial mayor of the town. And this is, you know, he'd been an actor in a lot of Westerns and all, but this was like a real highlight of his career to have him as a featured performer, a featured character that way. He absolutely embodies that character. And he has a speech, a famous speech at the Waterhole, as they call it, where he's out in the country with the young guys that you know, like Timothy Bottoms and Jeff Bridges, you know, that he's sort of a surrogate father for. And they're sitting around at the Watering Hole talking. And it's old times as he gets into the speech. And as he makes it, it's one of the great monologues ever on film, absolutely ever. And the thing that I asked Bogdanovich about was, I said, you know, the lighting in that scene, there's, you know, Ben Johnson sitting beside the body of water. He's going into this rather extended speech about thinking back to his own earlier life and when his wife and, you know, just everything that's been happening in terms of the storyline. And as he's talking, suddenly, like the light levels are changing in a way that's really dramatically effective. And I've been in the Midwest enough to know that when you have high clouds like that and a strong wind, they blow over fast and you'll be in brilliant sunlight. And then like 20 seconds later, like a shadow, right? And then back to sunlight. But in the film, they're so carefully controlled. I assume there must've been somehow like, you know, the tech crew was, you know, standing around affecting light levels, right? To get just the right effect at that moment in the speech. And Bogdanovich said, oh, no. He said that was divine providence. He said, in filmmaking, you can do all the planning in the world, but you know what saves you oftentimes and really makes the film is accident. He said, the clouds blew over in just the right way as Ben Johnson was delivering the speech. And you watch that scene thinking about the way the light levels fluctuate, and it's perfect. It's just what you would want for that. That was Mother Nature doing it for them. Ben Johnson won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. And then Cloris Leachman, of course, who also recently passed, you know, she plays the coach's wife, this frustrated, bitter woman, very unhappy marriage, very lonely, gets into an affair with one of the much younger characters. We think of Cloris Leachman in terms of that later career where she's a caricature, right? Where she's playing comic roles that are so over the top. You know, you think, yeah, she's made for Mel Brooks at that point, right? She's doing all this over the top stuff. But watch her in this film, and it's one of the great dramatic performances in American film history. I'll just say that and leave it that way. And she won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. So if we had like really a lot of time, we could go like through all of the actors in this film, how everyone is terrific. Even some actors we don't usually think of as great actors, they're all terrific in this, how well he works with the ensemble. Now, this is both a blessing and a curse. This is Marie's point. when the Last Picture Show came out, it received something like 8 Academy Award nominations. It won those 2 Oscars, both critically and commercially, a big hit. It puts Bogdanovich on the map, and everyone, he's one of the directors to watch at this point. That becomes a mixed blessing. In the next 2 to 3 years, he's in top form, critically and commercially. Right after Last Picture Show, the next year he does What's Up, Doc, where he's paying tribute to, again, he's paying tribute to earlier film forms. In the Last Picture Show, for instance, the small town movie theater is about to close. What's the last movie that's shown on the screen there? It's Howard Hawks' Red River. This is the film scholar, you know, intervening in terms of what they watch in the movie, within the movie, if you will. You know, he's paying tribute to these old great directors. So then in What's Up, Doc, he revisits, you know, with Ryan O'Neill and Barbara Streisand, the screwball comedies of the 30s. He's back into that. And then the year after that, we're getting to 1973, Paper Moon, you know, and you get a film that's set in the 30s. So you know, in black and white, and, you know, because, you know, the Last Picture Show shot in black and white. Here's Bogdanovich in modern times, if you will, making movies that are set in earlier decades and look oftentimes like they're being made then. He hits big. He hits very, very big in those few years. Success is a wicked thing sometimes. Bogdanovich has talked about this. In one interview later in life, he says, I handled success poorly. And in another interview late in life, he said very tersely, pride goeth before a fall. And when he fell, he really fell. And a lot of these are problems of his own devising. These are self-inflicted in some cases. For instance, on The Last Picture Show, one of the stars of the film is a very young Sybil Shepherd. Bogdanovich fell in love with her while they were making the film and started having an affair. The problem there was that the production designer on The Last Picture Show was Bogdanovich's wife, Polly Platt. Talk about a messy and uncomfortable set when you're married to the production designer, and they've been married for a while. They had 2 daughters and all, and you fall in love with your star, and she would become a star for better or for worse in some of Bogdanovich's upcoming films. Bogdanovich, very late in life, he had a sense of humor about this. He said, you know, there's some things you should never do when you're a film director. He said, one of them is don't fall in love with one of your actors. And so he mentioned that there. Now, I have a lot more to say about his later career in terms of the ups and downs, oftentimes the downs of it. But think of it this way. From 1971 to 1973, he was one of the top Hollywood directors. And I think there was the ego that went with that. There was the boastfulness. There was the adulterous affair. And he did point out that he and Sybil Shepherd remained as a couple for 8 or 9 years, which is about as long as he stayed married to Polly Platt earlier. That's long by Hollywood terms. So it wasn't just a fling on the set of Last Picture Show. They became a Hollywood couple for a while. But still, all of the melodrama that's off screen there. And then what happens by the mid-1970s, and you and I'll talk more about this, he has more misses than hits. In fact, almost everything misses for a while. And to make sure I get this in, because it's one of the most incisive quotes about this, when Bogdanovich takes his big fall, the pride that goeth before the fall, what does Hollywood do? They actually smile about this. A lot of people, frankly, take pleasure in the fact that this guy, this young director who's so full of himself, took a big fall. And there's an absolutely terrific, incisive quote to this effect from Billy Wilder, who certainly knows the history of Hollywood, having made so much of it himself. Here's what Billy Wilder said. This is about the period in the mid to late 70s where Bogdanovich had one flop after another. And a lot of people just, again, in Hollywood kind of took pleasure in that. Here's what Billy Wilder says. It is not true that Hollywood is a bitter place, divided by hatred, greed, and jealousy. All it takes to bring the community together is a flop by Peter Bogdanovich.
Wow, that is a tough quote. I don't know how true that is, but that certainly is a tough thing to say. I want to mention that Peter Bogdanovich's favorite film when he was 10 years old was Red River, which is probably why they put it on the marquee of the Last Picture Show. And I want to get back to what she said about his first wife being his production designer, because I've read some film criticism that says that was his crucial mistake, because after this movie, once he threw her over for Sybil Shepherd, his movies didn't do as well. And they, you know, I want to see what you think about whether or not that has to do with the fact that he had an excellent production designer that might have been responsible for some of his success. Yes, What's Up, Doc, and Paper Moon, and Mask, all these movies that he would do later were pretty solid movies, but you don't go back and watch them now. They're very dated for their times. You do come back to The Last Picture Show. And I want to mention that obviously had a thing for blondes, because after Sybil Shepherd, he did get involved with Dorothy Stratton, who was a Playboy playmate at the time and, you know, the toast of the town. And they were apparently madly in love. But then her estranged husband shot her. And I think that took the wind out of Peter Bogdanovich's sails, because this was something he had thought had, you know, finally broken his way. And after she was taken away from him, I think he sort of gave up on being, you know, sort of having a positive attitude about that sort of thing. I think he was in a slump for a very long time after that.
I actually asked Peter Bogdanovich about that. He and I talked about Dorothy Stratton. She was murdered by her estranged husband in 1980. He wrote a book about it called The Killing of the Unicorn, which is worth reading. She had appeared in his film, They All Laughed. He was crazy mad in love with her. After she was killed like that, he watched her in They All Laughed. He would watch it over and over again. He said himself that this devastated him, that his life fell apart. And it took a long time to recover. He had problems in those later years for a while with prescription pills and, you know, the usual Hollywood maladies, if you will, in terms of drugs and so on, and depression. It took him a long time to lift out of that. He made a lot of films that didn't quite work, you know, going back to the mid-70s, Long Last Love, Nickelodeon, St. Jack, They All Laughed, on and on, films that don't quite click critically or commercially. I'll single out two movies that do work. Mask from 1985. The second time I met Bogdanovich, he was presenting that film at Hopkins and talking about it. It's a really solid film with Cher in it, and it does hold up well, actually. Of his later films, that's one of the better ones. The other one I'll single out is not well known, but it's actually a very good film called The Cat's Meow from 2001. It takes place in 1924, involves William Randolph Hearst and Marion Davies and that whole circle of Hollywood talent and a mysterious murder that takes place and so on. It's a case in which Bogdanovich is able to indulge his love of Hollywood film history, but also as a filmmaker, he actually does pull things together. It's a small film. I don't want to oversell it, but it's a very satisfying film. But when you look at all the films he made in that period, in the 1970s onward, there are only those couple or only a few more we could even mention that work at all. And it's somehow he never quite fully recovered that spectacular talent he had in The Last Picture Show. And again, how can you not draw comparisons with his friend and housemate Orson Welles? You know, Citizen Kane, great start to the career. And then, the curse of being successful the first time out of the gate. You make a masterpiece, and then what do you make next? I think that haunted Bogdanovich as well. He was always irked when people would make that comparison to his face. So I just kind of edged into it when I talked with him. But he acknowledged, he said, yeah, you know, you make a film that gets a lot of attention. Well, what do you do next? How do you follow up on something like that? It's a real creative issue. It really can kind of give you a panicky feeling almost as a director. How do you top a masterpiece?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to make sure we mentioned Orson Welles and how that particular phenomenon where you make a movie that everybody talks about what a work of genius it is. Of course, Orson Welles had bad press going into his success with that movie, which I think is what colored people's opinions of the work he did afterwards, where Peter Bogdanovich didn't necessarily have all that baggage. But, you know, they were good friends, and it must have been interesting between the two of them to sort of realize that this person understands what is going on with my career more than anybody else in the world, because it's such a singular kind of experience to have that sort of early success that you can't follow up with in a way that brings you more. But that brings us to the end of this episode. Don't forget to look up all of Peter Bogdanovich's movies, because we're not going to get any more of those. Rest in peace. You can also check out our other episodes at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com and also on Pandora and Spotify under Dragon Digital Radio. And we'll see you next time at the movies.
See you there.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.